Amen. You guys can take a seat. My name is Mike. I'm one of the pastors here. It's Black Party Sunday. It's a gorgeous day to be outside. I'm excited to be here this morning. How about you? All right. Have any of you guys ever been to a party that didn't feel very much like a party? It's awkward, especially when it's a wedding reception. And as a pastor, I find myself at a lot of weddings. I've done some of your weddings. I've been at some of your weddings. I've been in some of your weddings. And just so that all of you in that boat can exhale real quick, the story I'm about to tell is not from any of your weddings. But I was reminded this week of the worst, least comfortable wedding reception I've ever been to. I was scrolling through Twitter and I saw an article about a wedding reception disaster. So I clicked on that bad boy because, let's be honest, that's usually funny stuff. And it ended up being just an article about a photographer who captured this moment where the cake table collapsed as the bride and groom were going to cut their cake, which would be a huge bummer. But I felt like disaster was an exaggeration because I've seen a disaster. At this wedding, it started to go south with the best man's toast, which is usually one of the best parts of a wedding reception. He stands up and talks for 4 minutes and gives the groom a hard time, and it's funny. And then you move on to the maid of honor who stands up with three other people and they give a 17 to 42 minute speech that alternates between crying and inside jokes, and like three people are laughing and 200 people are thinking, I'm so hungry, just please be done soon. That's how weddings go. Don't shoot the messenger. But this best man speech got real uncomfortable. He kept saying stuff to the bride like, you better never fail to get my boy a sandwich whenever he wants one. And I was thinking, I don't know if this guy knows how marriage works at all. And then they went to cut the cake. And it would have been so much better if the cake table had just collapsed. But unfortunately, it didn't. And they cut the cake and they started to feed it to each other and he smashed it in her face. Which is fine in and of itself if she knows it's coming and you plan that stuff beforehand, or if you're like a goofy couple who likes to have fun and she at least has a strong suspicion. If she doesn't know it's coming and she runs off crying, you guys might be shocked to learn that is a real party killer at a wedding. But here we are and she's gone and the groom is standing there looking like an idiot, and the DJ, God bless his heart, tried to save the moment. He's like, all right, let's crank some music and get this party started. But at that point, when Cisco starts blaring on the speakers, you're kind of like, I don't know if this is the moment for that. I will never forget how much in that moment I wanted to not be right where I was. I just would have rather been almost anywhere else. It was a party that didn't feel very much like a party. And I wonder how many people out there in our world would say that about church. How many people have shown up at a church and had such a disillusioning experience that they thought, I would rather be anywhere other than here right now. This is awkward and uncomfortable. And I just want to go. This doesn't feel like a party at all. And some of you may be thinking right now, I didn't know that church was supposed to feel like a party. But guess what? It is. Jesus actually made it clear with the way that he lived his life and the things that he said that every time we gather together, it ought to be a celebration. That his people ought to be a people who are defined by love and hope and excitement and the ability to find beauty, even the brokenness of the world. Like, this is supposed to be fun. But I'm not 100% sure if we walked out and surveyed like thousands of people all around Des Moines that fun is the word they'd use if we asked them to describe church. We might get a lot of answers that are a little bit more similar to the author H.L. Mencken, who once wrote that Christianity is the haunting fear that someone somewhere is having a good time. Which, that's tragic. And we gotta combat that line of thinking. But in fairness to him and to so many other people out there, a lot of us have been in that church before. Some of us grew up going to that church where you went every Sunday and they talked about love and sang about joy, but everybody forgot to tell their face. You're just like, whew. Like, sour and somber is not the vision that Jesus has for his church. He said his people, his called out ones, his church should be defined by joy and hope and love, filled with peace in every situation, not because the world isn't full of challenges, but because we know the one who can overcome those challenges, the one who's bigger than our circumstances. And so when we get together, it's intended to be a party, and not just on Block Party Sunday. So I want you to know this morning, whether this is your first time ever at Revision or this is your 100th time here, I'm just excited that you came this morning. This is an open invitation party. I have friends who have never had an experience inside of a place that they would call church, and I've invited a whole bunch of them to come, and some of them have, but they're usually nervous before they show up. They ask me, like, what do I need to wear, and do I have to bring money, and what do I need to know before it's okay for me to show up? And I love being able to tell them, you need to wear a tuxedo or else don't show up. No, I love being able to tell them that there are no strings attached to showing up here, that church is one of the only places on the planet that you can just show up and belong and be loved without bringing anything to the table, without doing anything to earn it. You can find meaning, and it's free. It's just given as a gift. And so we're fired up that you're here. And this morning we're going to talk about Jesus, but I want to talk about maybe a different aspect of Jesus than any of us are used to talking about. Because if you grew up in or around church, if you've been to church before, if you're one of the people who goes like Christmas and Easter and you kind of like know the story, you've probably heard a lot about Jesus' miracles. And they're really cool. I mean, he walked on water. He fed thousands of people with just a little bit of bread and a couple fish. He helped the lame walk and the blind see. Like he was incredible. And you've probably also heard a little bit about Jesus' teachings. Just this incredible wisdom that changed the course of world history, the Beatitudes, how Jesus would sit on a hill and just download wisdom to everybody who showed up. We talk a lot about the miracles that Jesus did and the things that Jesus taught, but in church, we don't talk very often about how much Jesus ate. We just gloss right over that part. But seriously, if you read the eyewitness accounts of his life, these books called Matthew and Mark and Luke and John, that dude was constantly eating. And so I want to warn you this morning, if you're going to try and follow in the footsteps of Jesus, you got to know this. If you eat like Jesus, but you don't walk like Jesus, you're going to look like Buddha. All right, so that's free advice. That's free advice. But Jesus spent a whole lot of time eating, going to parties, hanging out with people who had invited him over, and a whole bunch of the conversations that we read about him having in the accounts of his life happened while he was at a party, crashing into other people, showing his disciples, modeling for them what he wanted the church to look like, how he wanted them to interact with people, who he wanted them to be when they got together after he was gone. He wanted to show them that they needed to make it a priority to create space in their lives to crash into other people. He wanted to show them that they needed to find joy, even in spaces that felt like joy couldn't be found, that they needed to celebrate who he was and what he'd done in their lives every single time they got together. He was giving them a picture of the church, and it looked a whole lot like a party. Jesus had a lot of thoughts about parties. So what we're going to talk about this morning is how to party like Jesus. And we're going to go over there, and we're going to party like Jesus. And we're going to learn how to do it by looking at four different accounts of parties in the life and the story of Jesus so we can get a bigger, better vision of who he wants us to be when we get together. Okay, so if you've got a Bible or a Bible with you this morning, you can crack it open to the book of Luke, chapter 14. It's sandwiched right between Mark and John. If you don't have one, you can follow along on the screen or in the Revision app. And if you need one or your kids do, we got them in a bunch of different colors for a bunch of different ages back at that table. We love it when they disappear. Please take whatever you want before you leave today. But Luke 14, Jesus is actually at a party with a bunch of his followers, and he's observing the way people are interacting with one another. And he notices that kind of the way some of these people are talking and hanging out with some of the other people at the party is actually limiting them. They're missing out on some of the beauty that can happen when we get together. And so he calls his crew together. He's like, hey, come over here, guys. Look, when you go to a party, this is the lens that I want you to see it through. In verse 7, it says, when Jesus noticed how the guests picked the places of honor at the table, he told his followers this parable. He said, when someone invites you to a wedding feast, do not take the place of honor, for a person more distinguished than you may have been invited. And if so, the host who invited both of you will come and say to you, give this person your seat. And then, humiliated, you'll have to go take the least important place. But when you're invited, take the lowest place, so that when your host comes, he'll say to you, friend, move up to a better place. Then you will be honored in the presence of all the other guests. For all those who exalt themselves will be humbled. And those who humble themselves will be exalted. I love how he does this, because he starts with this ridiculous assumption. He gets his guys together. He's like, you guys, you're not going to believe this, and it's not going to happen today, but someday you might be in a room with someone cooler than you. somebody who's more important than you. And that's difficult for any of us to really believe deep down, but it's super difficult for his disciples because they were used to seeing religious leaders. These guys called the Pharisees and Sadducees get together in crowds and jockey for position. Just try to leverage every situation that they could because they desperately wanted to be seen as the most important person in the room. And Jesus looks at them, he's like, they're so caught up in themselves. They're missing out on every life that's surrounding them. And they're going to end up humiliated in the end. And so when you guys go to a party, here's what I want you to do. I want you to seek service, not status. This is the first lesson I want us to learn this morning about how to party like Jesus, that we need to seek service, not status. We need to show up not to be served, but to serve. We need to show up in places not so that we can be valued, but so that we can add value. Not to be somebody, but to do something. Because the truth is, if you don't choose humility, humiliation will choose you. I think humiliation is one of my least favorite emotions in the world. I just loathe it. I don't even mind failure. I just mind people knowing that I failed because it's humiliating. And Jesus is like, look, if you take seats that don't belong to you, you're gonna get kicked out of those seats and it'll be humiliating. And I don't know if any of the rest of you who have ever had that happen, but it is humiliating when it happens. A few years ago, like back when the Minnesota Twins played in the Metrodome, you could get tickets for $5 because it was the worst baseball stadium in ever, maybe ever invented. It was just terrible. So me and some buddies went to a game, got $6 cheap seats or $5 cheap seats in the nosebleed section. And through the seventh inning, the Twins pitcher was throwing a perfect game. And he was a no-name guy who was terrible. I don't even remember. He never threw another good game in his life. But we realized there are hundreds of open box seats. And if we're witnessing a perfect game, this doesn't happen very often. We got to go get a better view. And so we snuck down and sat about 10 rows from the field on the first base side. And all my friends were acting like they totally belonged. And I know that I wasn't. I was just looking like, oh, I don't belong here. And sure enough, after two batters, the usher came down and asked to see our seats. And then everyone looked at us while we had to do the thing of like, oh, these aren't our seats. And I didn't even look up. I just looked straight at my feet while we did the whole walk of shame back up to the nosebleed section. Like, Jesus warned me about this. I should have listened. We do that. There's something inside all of us that desperately wants the place of honor. We see the people who are like at the center of it all and we think, oh, I so want to be them. But do we really? Are those the people who are most attractive on a human level? Are those the people who seem like they're most fully alive? My grandma's 98. We had a birthday party for her not that long ago, and I went to get some food, and I found her standing behind the counter serving food at her birthday party, which is the least surprising thing ever if you know my grandma, but I yelled at her anyway. I was like, Grandma, this is your party. Would you just sit down and eat? And she didn't do that. She doesn't. She just kept serving and kept helping and then cleaned up after her own birthday party. Which, have you ever met anybody like that? There are some people in the world you just can't honor more than they're willing to serve. And they're the best people. Like, those are the people who get invited to everybody's party because you just want to be around them. You want to breathe their air. Like, they're living at a different level than everybody else is living. They're fully alive. And that's my grandma. She's packed hundreds of years of living in the 98 years of life. I just think for us, like, Jesus is trying to tell us here, when you get together with other people, seek service, not status. Don't be so inward focused seeking status that you miss out on every life you're crashing into. Be outward focused and seek to serve because you're going to be fully alive when you do. The second lesson about how to party like Jesus comes if we fast forward just one chapter to Luke 15. Jesus tells his disciples a story about a party that seems just like crazy and counterintuitive. He tells them, this is verse 3, then Jesus told them this parable. Suppose one of you has 100 sheep and loses one of them. Doesn't he leave the 99 just out in the open country and go after that lost sheep until he finds it? And when he finds it, he joyfully puts it on his shoulders and goes home. Then he calls all of his friends and neighbors together and says, rejoice with me. Let's have a party. I found my lost sheep. I tell you, in the same way, there will be more rejoicing in heaven over one sinner who repents than over 99 righteous persons who do not need to repent. So there's this one guy and he finds a lost sheep and then he throws a party that costs him more than the sheep was even worth because he's just that fired up about it. And Jesus tells his disciples, you guys, this is what heaven is like. Every good thing is cause for a party. Every small step, every person on this planet matters enough to God that we throw parties all the time. That imagery just blows my mind. Like all of heaven exploding into celebration because one messed up person found their way back to God. It's easy in life to think that we aren't worth celebrating. It's easy in life to think that little things aren't worth celebrating, that in the routine and the mundane, there's nothing in our lives to celebrate at all. And I find myself caught in that trap a lot. I am not a great celebrator. I'm always looking ahead, like, maybe later, but this isn't worth getting excited about. And sometimes I'm cynical and suspicious of people who are great at celebrating, especially people who love celebrating birthdays. You know those people who are like, I just wanted to remind you my birthday's next week. I just want to remind you, I'm not getting you anything. I don't care how long we've been married, I'm not changing now. I'm just kidding. Okay, but like so often in life, we just like, we're not where we want to be yet. And our vision hasn't been completely accomplished. And so we're like, I'll put it off. I'm going to celebrate then. I'll celebrate when I get there. And Jesus is like, no. You guys got to understand. If you want to party like me, nothing is too small to celebrate. Nothing's too small to celebrate. You guys, we have an enemy that hates it when we celebrate little victories because he wants to keep us believing that we don't have the strength to get all the way to where God wants us. That our progress is small and insignificant and the world is too broken for us to do what we want to do and achieve our dreams and make a difference. But if we start getting fired up and getting together and celebrating and throwing parties about little steps, every beginning, every little thing, then not only are we living more fully alive, but we're more likely to keep making progress. And so Jesus said, nothing is too small to celebrate. The next lesson we get from the life of Jesus about how to party comes from one of my favorite moments in the entire Bible. In the book of Matthew, Matthew actually gives us this autobiographical account of how Jesus found him and called him and completely turned his life upside down. In chapter 9, he writes, Jesus went on from there. He saw a man named Matthew. It's me, sitting at a tax collector's booth. Follow me, he told him. And Matthew got up and followed him. Well, Jesus was having dinner at Matthew's house. Many tax collectors and sinners came and ate with him and his disciples. When the Pharisees, the religious dudes, saw this, they asked his disciples, why does your teacher eat with tax collectors and sinners? On hearing this, Jesus said, it's not the healthy who need a doctor, but the sick. Go learn what this means. I desire mercy, not sacrifice. For I've not come to call the righteous, but sinners. So Matthew tells us, I was a tax collector. And we got to understand in ancient Israel, being a tax collector was like one rung lower on the social ladder than being a prostitute. These were people who colluded with an occupying enemy force, the Roman government, to collect taxes from their people. And they got rich by overcharging people. These guys were not popular. It may be shocking, but back in Jesus' day, people did not like the IRS. It wasn't like today. Back then, they were corrupt. So anyways, this is Matthew's story. And Jesus finds him sitting there on the side of the road. And instead of judging him, instead of yelling at him, instead of lecturing him about what a rotten sinner he was, Jesus sees him and invites him to follow. And it just wrecked Matthew's world. You can tell how much this changed. That he got an invitation to the party. He says, I dropped everything immediately and I followed Jesus and he transformed my life. And Matthew's life is so transformed. He does the only thing that he knows how to do. He calls up all of his friends. He's like, hey, come over for a party. I want you to meet Jesus too. The problem is all of Matthew's friends are degenerates just like him. A bunch of tax collectors and prostitutes and sinners. Some Bible translations call them scum. Which is this incredible image because here's the God of the universe partying with the scum of the earth. And the religious guys, the churchy people, they can't wrap their minds around that. They're like, that's so gross. Those people are so messed up. Who would do that? In the ancient world, there are actually only two groups of people who would hang out with the scum of the earth. One is other scums, and two is Jesus's. That's the whole list. And the Pharisees thought Jesus ought to take himself up off that list. And he looked at them, he said, no, you don't get it. They're the reason I came. So are you, but you don't understand, you're broken. I actually stepped out of eternity into history so that I could give my life in order that every person on this planet might be saved, in order that every person on this planet might find hope and healing and love. This party I'm throwing, this gathering that I'm inventing, this thing that I'm gonna start called the church, everybody's invited. Like, if we're gonna party like Jesus, everybody is invited. That's what the church is about. That's what the church is supposed to be. Here at Revision, we're always gonna be a no matter church. Like, no matter who you are, no matter where you've been, no matter what you've done, and no matter what's been done to you, you are invited in and you're welcome here. And we don't always get that right. The church doesn't always get that right. And I honestly, the church is easy to criticize. And it's deserved. Like, on a whole, the church, and on a specific level, this church. But despite all of the faults and failings and shortcomings that the church has, there's something profound and unique about it too. Like, look around you right now. This is a tent full of people you would never be in a tent with, you would never be in a room with, and you would never rub shoulders with outside of the church. Jesus brings us together. And I'm convinced that it is only when we come to Jesus that we can actually come to each other and see the walls that get built up between us torn down, because that's what Jesus does. We live in a world that constantly pulls us apart and tries to divide us along lines of race and education and economics, but Jesus breaks all of that down, because at his party, everybody is invited. And when we figure that out, like, coming to Jesus, it connects us to a deeper humanity. It allows us to see the fingerprints of God on every beautiful life we crash into. It opens us up to people we would have never been open to, except that Jesus was open to us. And it makes the world a better place because everybody's invited to the party. And the last lesson about how to party like Jesus is a real simple one. It's from the first party we ever read about Jesus attending. John 2 tells us that Jesus went to this wedding that ran out of wine. And back then, weddings were week-long affairs, and they ran out of wine on the third day. And somehow Jesus' mom was involved at this wedding, and so she came to him, and she's like, can you make more wine? And he's like, I don't want to. And she said, just do it. So then we know what happened, because that's how moms are. And we read that nearby stood six stone water jars, the kind used by the Jews for ceremonial washing, each holding from 20 to 30 gallons. And Jesus said to the servants, fill the jars with water. So they filled them to the brim. Then he told them, now draw some out and take it to the master of the banquet, the father of the bride. They did so, and the master of the banquet tasted the water that had been turned into wine. Now here's why this mattered so much. Not because the wine was gone, everyone was drunk, and they were going to start swinging, like, why is the wine gone? This was like over a period of days, okay? It mattered because in that culture, wine symbolized joy. So when they ran out of wine, the joy was gone. Which wasn't just a party killer, it was a really bad omen for them about the marriage. The joy had run out. I mean, I feel like there are spaces in every single one of our lives where we kind of feel like that wedding, like the joy ran out. What do we do with that? What do we do when life beats us down and then the joy has run out at a party? What do we do when the joy's run out of a marriage? What do we do when the joy has run out at a job, when the joy has run out of life? I think all of us are longing for joy, and we want more than a shattered world has to offer. But when the joy runs out, we have this temptation to just step back from it all, to decide that we got to give up and we got to lose hope, because what else could we do we're empty, and we want to retreat from community, and we want to be alone, and we want to just kind of do it on our own. And Jesus is telling us, no, 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 that's the wrong approach. Keep showing up. Keep plugging in. Keep connecting to community, because there is no emptiness I can't fill. And if you just get together and celebrate, then I'll do the thing that I can do. And here's what Jesus does. Jesus brings the joy. Like, we throw the party and Jesus brings the joy. Even in moments like that wedding where the wine ran out, even in a world where it seems like joy is in short supply, Jesus brings it. And he doesn't just bring a little bit. When he was at that wedding, he's like, how many jars are there? Fill them all the way up. Jesus brings the joy 150 gallons at a time. And when he pours it out, there's nothing for us to do but celebrate. We throw the party and Jesus brings the joy. And we got to do that, I think, because we're living in a world that is longing for joy. There's so many people all around us that our lives are crashing into, are searching for peace and hope, and they have no idea where to find it. There's a lot of people in our world who don't even realize they're desperate for an invite to the party that church is supposed to be. And so we got to invite them. There are over 2/3 of 1 million people in the Des Moines metro area, and we can't settle for anything less than everybody knowing that they're invited in, everybody knowing that they have a chance to belong, everybody knowing that they're welcome at the party. And I'm convinced, you guys, that if we get together, when we get together and we party like Jesus partied, when we decide to seek service rather than status, when we decide that nothing's too small to celebrate, when we decide that everybody is invited to the party and we know Jesus is bringing the joy, then it changes us profoundly, and it equips us to be a people who find hope even when things seem hopeless, who find light even in the midst of a very, very dark world, who find meaning and joy that points people towards Jesus, and Jesus changes everything. Jesus rescues us, not just from our fear and brokenness and sin, but to the lives that we were created for. He comes in and he replaces our fear with courage and our emptiness with meaning and our loneliness with belonging. He forgives us and sets us free, and he fills us up to overflowing with life and joy, and he brings us to the party. Would you guys bow your heads and close your eyes? Now, I know there are some of us here who have never met Jesus. Maybe some of us here who never really believed that because of who we are and what we've done or what's been done to us, that we actually had an open invite to the party. And we're throwing this party this morning. And we throw this party every Sunday so that you can know, so you can walk out of here knowing that you know deep down in your soul that Jesus came for you and Jesus loves you and you're welcome at the party. And I just want to lead you in a prayer. And I want to promise you that if you'll give yourself to Jesus, he'll trade you himself. And all you got to do is say, Jesus, I'm broken and I'm needy. I need love and hope and forgiveness. I want to give you myself. And if you do that, what you're going to find is transformation and life change. And all of us, I think, this morning, let's all pray that. If we give what we know of ourselves to what we know of God, God's going to come in and he's going to fill us up with hope and joy and meaning and longing. And he's going to forgive us for the places where we've fallen short. And he's going to bring us in to his family, to his community, to his party. Just thank you, God, for that.